From being the interim vice president for student affairs to the new chief diversity officer, we sit down and talk to Rob Owens this week on Tennessee Tech Today. Hello, everyone. I'm Buddy Pearson, the news and communications director at Tennessee Tech. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning Tennessee Tech Today show. Robert Owens was named to the newly elevated chief diversity officer position. Previously, the position was an additional role for Mark Burnett, the former vice president for student affairs, who retired at the end of 2019. The position will now be a permanent addition to the president's cabinet. Owens has over 15 years of progressive senior administrative roles at Tennessee Tech and is currently the interim vice president for student affairs. His previous position was assistant vice president for student affairs, focusing on access and diversity, and he holds 4 degrees from Tennessee Tech. So, Rob, we're more than halfway through the spring semester.
Yes.
And a year ago, you know, when everything broke loose, it's hard to believe it's been a year. That we went through a tornado and then the beginning of the pandemic and then, you know, last spring moving online, this fall making the transition of people coming back on campus. The spring maybe seems to have gone a little bit smoother. Just your thoughts on, man, just what has transpired in the last year while you've been the vice president of student affairs, interim vice president of student affairs.
You know, I think we're starting to get accustomed to saying it's been a wild year.
Yeah.
But if you really you sober yourself up and you really think about those things individually and then begin to allow yourself to process those things together, it does make you it makes you realize that you can do more than what you thought you could do before the challenge came.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say you, I don't mean me. I mean, I do mean myself, but I mean my colleagues,
mm-hmm.
People in my division in student affairs that I've grown so close to over this year, over the last 14 months. I think about our students.
Mm-hmm.
Some of whom we've lost some students along the way due to, you know, some of them are at home because they're not staying in the halls with all online classes. Some of them just couldn't take the current climate of going to school remotely, and there's anxiety and depression that students have dealt with on another level. So we've lost some on the way, but the majority of our students have stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been so impressive to watch that. I could go on and on about, you know, my cabinet mates with the president and all the other VPs and Mark Wilson, athletic director, and the amount of times that we've met, you know, the war rooms that you plan for as top level administrators. There were plans for a pandemic, mm-hmm. done 10, 15, 12 years ago.
Sure.
But to live that stuff out, to be someone that's living and breathing as a vice president when you actually have a pandemic and then you already had a tornado and then you've got, you know, flags being burned and people kneeling for the anthem and banter back and forth and rioting, to be at the table in that time for me has been sobering. But it's also, again, allowed me to see the resiliency of human beings. My goodness, and some of the best of whom are here at Tennessee Tech University. I'm telling you what.
Well, you know, they say the best laid plans. And, you know, this time last year, we'd come back from spring break, and we were completely online. And, that kind of had to come about pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then we took the summer months to really, you know, meet and plan and prepare for what the fall was going to look like.
Yeah.
Made it through the fall. Come into the spring, and now it seems like this summer's again there's going to be planning on what this fall is going to look
sure.
like, because it's going to look totally different than last
right.
fall.
That's right. And I'll go you one before that, and I'll walk into your question. We're planning now for I know enrollment management folks are in first year programs, they're head over heels in planning for SOAR for this year.
Mm-hmm.
which we feel like can look different than it did last year, a little bit more loose.
Right.
But they're planning for that now. You know, what does it look like to have SOAR with COVID-19 still present? Well, it's always going to be present with us, but very present, people still getting it and getting sick while vaccines rolling out at the same time.
Right.
So, like, how much better can it be for our participants? And so we're planning for that, and we're planning for a handful of summer camps, trying to figure out what it looks like to have high school students on our campus in small numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So there are departments that are feverishly trying to figure that out, working with Residential Life and Chartwells, which is our food service company. And so that's going on. At the same time, we're planning for the fall semester,
mm-hmm.
And getting prepped for that. I think of our provost, Dr. Lori Bruce, provost and vice president for academic affairs, has been working extremely hard and being diligent about trying to find class spaces to allow us to still be distant in the classroom, because we don't know how the virus is going to move and who's going to get vaccinated and what the variants are going to look like. So she has undergone this arduous task of securing enough rooms on campus where we can teach in a spread out fashion, which means you've got to have more sections of classes as well.
Right.
So we're having to hire more adjunct faculty. But we're doing all of that to try to provide an authentic in-person class experience in a different way than we did this past fall.
Sure.
While keeping in mind, again, that the pandemic is still present.
Yeah.
So there's safety on one hand, but, what's the best way we can figure out how to be safe, but doggone it, have our new freshmen and our sophomores who didn't get the real experience to get more of a real experience.
Yeah.
So all kind of stuff is going on to plan for next fall. But I tell you, buddy, I've got a great office, and so I'm able to look out onto the Centennial Plaza,
mm-hmm.
and it makes me emotional. I'm emotional now looking out on the plaza and seeing, even if some of them have their mask on outside, seeing students walk about the plaza to and from class. Student organizations have been much more present on campus this spring,
right.
Setting up tables, promoting events, giving away T-shirts. It's almost been overwhelming sometimes when I leave the UC and I walk to my car, and I'm rubbing shoulders with students, because I literally have thought this month, because again, it was this month that we didn't come back.
Right.
It was like a ghost town, and it was extremely uncomfortable to be on this campus. And somebody like me, I'm here. Only reason I'm here is because of the students.
Right.
I feel like this is my calling. But part of that calling is to work with students and to help students go out and change the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really uncomfortable to be here last spring, and they weren't here.
Yeah.
So I get overjoyed to see activity again.
Yeah.
Golly.
Well, one of the things that could look different in the fall is your role here with the university. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I want to talk about, we go back to when Mark Burnett retired and you became the interim director of student affairs.
Yeah.
And, you didn't have a time frame on it. Wasn't really looking at, I guess any particular length of time. You just knew that you weren't going to apply for the job, that you were here on the interim basis.
Right.
And now when you look back at what you've had to deal with as the interim director of student affairs, going back a year, year and a half, do you still wish that's a decision you would have made?
To take the interim position?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was in hindsight, say hindsight is 20/20. It was the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
So foresight in that situation, foresight and hindsight match up. I think we thought 6 months, 9 months at the most, We've gone through the search process and have our new VP in. And I was thankful to just have an opportunity to help be the transitionary vice president between Mark Burnett, who was he's a long-termer. He's a long-timer. Transition from his 30-plus years, 20-something as the VP, to whoever the next person is going to be. I felt like I was suited for that because I knew our team. But had no idea. None of us have a crystal ball or have godly wisdom or insight to that point where we could predict.
Yeah.
Now, there's some people that have, in some ways, kind of knew a pandemic was coming at some point soon.
Right.
But, like, truth be told, none of us knew. But for me, it's given me – it'll probably be around a year and a half that I would have had a seat at the table as a vice president for student affairs. I couldn't put a price on the experiences that I've had, what I've learned from President Oldham, but all of my cabinet mates, they're so wise and intelligent. Do we make mistakes? Yes, but I've been able to watch us navigate through making mistakes, but I've also seen us make some tremendously correct decisions. Just having, instead of 6 months or 9 months of time with them in this role,
yeah,
I've had 16, 17, 18 months, and I'm the better for it.
Right.
I'm so thankful that I said yes to being the interim. I wouldn't give it up for any amount of money, man. Within reason.
And, of course, we'll get to see the man who you replaced, Mark Burnett, on April 9th with the grand opening of the Mark L. Burnett Fitness and Recreation Center, known as The Burn.
The Burn.
He'll be back, and what a great shindig that's going to be on April 9th. So,
definitely.
And that's something that, during your watch, it became open last summer, but because of COVID, because of the pandemic, people haven't really been able to enjoy it 100%.
Yeah.
Wow, what an addition, and something that's been so great for student life here on campus.
Oh, fantastic. You look at the number of patrons that we had at the old fitness center. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of students in a day at the old fitness center. It's part of the reason why we outgrew it. Coming up on 30-year space, but very well maintained by David Mullinax and his staff over the years. It didn't look like it needed. We needed a new one, but just capacity-wise, we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're excited about is moving forward, as you said, kind of the official grand opening finally is happening on April the 9th. But we're looking forward to a summer and then a fall where we're going to be much more like what normal is on a college campus. And that building is going to be, it's going to be a hub of activity and new activity.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be fantastic when fall opens up with The Burn. Because there were some things we scaled back on because of the pandemic.
Right.
Within the building, there were some activities that were slated that just didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll be able to explore much more fully what that building and what our campus rec program can do come August. And then, of course, intramurals will be wide open again in August. We've been doing intramurals, but it'll be much more robust in the fall. So I'm excited and also excited to celebrate Mark Burnett. He's got such a long and rich history and legacy at Tennessee Tech. And, some people might say Mark is falling off the face of the earth since he retired. People are asking me, have I seen him? And can he
give me his email address? He's definitely been maintaining a low profile.
He is retired.
Yes.
But if you come out on April the 9th,
yes,
you will get a Mark Burnett sighting.
Absolutely. He will be here. And, you've come into this office, and right now the process is underway to see who will be in line after Mark, after you, to be the next vice president for student affairs. And so basically, your days are numbered, man. Your days are numbered as the VP.
I'm going to tell you what. I have, some people may remember the article. I think Ben Wheeler did a write-up in the Herald Citizen last December. December of 19, right before I assumed the role as interim VP in January 2020. And I said, this is my dream role.
Yeah.
I have that, buddy, I have that article. It's been in my phone, pulled up, because I never want to forget that, that interview that he did, because it was a dream role for me to be able to follow in the footsteps of someone like Mark Burnett, who over the years became a mentor of mine as well, not just a supervisor. It was a dream role, and to be able to serve students at the top level. You know, there's no other, there's no higher student affairs officer than the VP of student affairs, you know, other than the president of the university. And so, you know, I had the chance to fill that role and to sit in this seat for a long time. And that's a role that I could see doing for years and years and years. But that's going to come to an end for me, most likely, because we're in the middle of a search. Unless something goes awry, we'll have another person sitting in the VP seat. And at that point, I'll transition into chief diversity officer role. So it'll be bittersweet from the standpoint of I could see myself doing this job.
Yeah,
I love the work. I love my colleagues, all the directors within Student Affairs Division. And I can go down the list from Multicultural Affairs to Accessible Ed Center to Health Services. Just go down the list.
Right.
Phenomenal professionals, some of whom have worked an inordinate amount of hours because of the pandemic.
Right.
And we've wrestled this pandemic and grown closer. So I could be firmly positioned in this role. But I will transition into the chief diversity officer role. And so the bitter side is leaving in some ways, the folks that I built relationships with and being able to serve students in a different way.
Right.
The sweet part of it is I'm not leaving our institution.
Right.
And I'll be able to do something that I know I'm called to do and I have a gifting to do.
Mm-hmm.
Work across racial lines and gender lines and bring people to the table and figure out best ways to serve not just the majority, but also serve the minority, the underrepresented. And when I say minority, I'm not saying black. I'm saying minority in a certain major, you know, women in STEM, for example. Men in nursing, male nursing majors are in the minority. Being able to do that type of work is something that I enjoy. So it'll be bittersweet in every sense of that word, you know, come whenever the new VP.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Rob Owens. Stay with us.
You can't predict the future, but you can count on Tennessee Tech University always putting students first. Tech understands today's challenges and helps students by showing strength, compassion, patience, kindness, and common sense. We put students first on a safe, accessible campus close to home. That's what you can count on at Tennessee Tech. Find out more at tntech.edu/wingsup.
Welcome back to Tennessee Tech Today, where we continue our conversation with Rob Owens, the new Chief Diversity Officer at Tennessee Tech. You know, we got so used to seeing Mark in that role, and we've gotten used to seeing you in this role.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're absolutely right in the fact that, you know, you're a natural for the role, and it would be just a natural to continue to see you in this role.
Yeah.
But now you have a new role, and it's not really a new role, but it has a new title. It has a title and a position, but it's something that you've been doing and that Mark did the entire time that he was here and that you have done while you've been here, and it's Chief Diversity Officer. Yeah. Mark Burnett, of course, was the first Chief Diversity Officer when he kind of retired from this job and was that. Now you take over that position.
Yeah.
So define that position. You know, as you know, if they were going to put the job description out there and say we're going to hire a Chief Diversity Officer, this is what we're looking for, and this is what the job entails.
Yeah. This role for me, and of course, this is out of lots of years of doing work kind of in this area, but also more recently, spending time in conversation with the president and other folks across the campus. This is, it's a multifaceted role with the ultimate goal. My ultimate goal in this work is for us to make sure that we do our best in graduating students that can go anywhere on the face of this earth and work, be highly productive, successful at being a change agent. That's it. And I think we've not done that as well as we could in the past.
Okay.
And so what does that mean? You know, a lot of people will get hung up on the black, white, the race thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a part of it. It's a significant part of the work at our institution, because our institution and the region in which we sit has never been ethnically diverse. It just historically it's never been that way.
Right.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing. It just hasn't been.
Yeah.
But a big part of the work right now is the diversifying our faculty, diversifying our student population, so that we got a critical mass of people of color across our campus. So that's a big part of the work. And I think another part of it is
go ahead. I want to stop you right there, because you said something at the board meeting that I thought was very telling when somebody asked, why diversify campus when the region and the campus, you know, isn't that diversified to begin with?
Yeah, sure.
And so, you know, why? Why do that?
Yeah, because inevitably we're going to send students to places that they didn't know that they were going. You know, many students come here and they, quote unquote, have an idea of where they want to go. Okay, I'm going to teach science. I'm going to go back to my home county and I'm going to teach science.
Right.
Well, what they don't envision is maybe that they were going to meet their spouse and they're going to end up working in the city where their spouse is.
Yeah.
And they, instead of being able to go back to, I'm just going to throw this out, Fentress County.
Yeah.
And teach and just retire in Fentress County as a high school teacher. There's nothing to be wrong with that.
Right.
I still want to go back and retire in my home county, which is Rutherford County, Murfreesboro,
yeah,
at some point. But what students inevitably find out, like I did, is that when you come here as a freshman, particularly if you're a traditional age student, you may not be in that major when you graduate, and two, you may not have a really good idea of what you're going to do and where you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes students graduate and they end up in work situations that they did not anticipate they were going to be in.
Sure.
And sometimes they're not equipped necessarily from a social standpoint, a sociocultural standpoint, to go in and thrive in that setting.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that to be an issue. I feel like if we've got a student that comes here from an all-white institution, all-white high school, from somewhere in our region, and they've not worked in a student group, and you're working 40 project groups by the time you graduate, especially if you're an engineer, and you've just worked with a handful of Hispanic students or black students, or maybe you're a white male engineering student, and you had three or four female students in project groups over the course of your time.
Sure.
I feel like we've done a disservice in preparing you to go out and work for a global engineering company, for example. I'll give you another example just really quickly. I had an alumni call this week with one of my former classmates, black male from Tennessee. I won't name the county, but a small county, small town in Tennessee. But he's a black guy. And we studied together in engineering, great relationship in undergrad. Of course, I didn't go engineering. I ended up in education.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in engineering in one realm, and then transitioned to another company. He's been with that company for several years. But it's in a part of the country that is highly diverse.
Yeah.
And then this person also found himself and his family working across seas. Mm-hmm. You take a little small town kid, and you can, it could have been black kid, it could have been Hispanic, could have been white, but small town Tennessee. I know what that looks like.
Sure.
I'm a Tennessean through and through.
Absolutely.
And they tend to be predominantly, most of our counties tend to be predominantly white.
Right.
And it's only black-white relationships. And, you know, might nowadays you might have some Hispanic folks that have moved in. Mm-hmm. But we were just talking about this diversity thing, and he said something I think is very telling. He said, a company like this one, and I'm not going to call the name of it, but it's one that we're all familiar with, a global company. He said, a global company like this, he said, we can't have – he said, if you come here and you can't work in diverse teams, you and you're not open-minded, you can't stay here long.
Yeah,
it's impossible. Just the culture is one that's inclusive and diverse. Mm-hmm. It's not what we're about, the business of producing this product, mm-hmm. but in order for us to produce the best product, we got to have diverse mindsets because
sure.
we're not going to produce the best product.
Yeah,
and that was very telling for me. That had been my mindset as I espoused at the board meeting for years, mm-hmm. is that we got to prepare students to like go into a diverse world. But like hearing it from someone that's a high-level executive of a billion-dollar company to say – no, people really need to understand. It's not just black and white. It's not, you know, like we take sides around this issue.
Right.
We politicize it. If the world's going to be better, we got to learn to work together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so I guess that would be part two to my answer, buddy, is I envision this work as being able to help our students go out and make better change. You know, we're seeing – a lot of gun violence, and some of it we might be able to attribute to race or politics, and some just it's a very nasty world in some ways. And so I also want our students to graduate and be able to make change in that world, not graduate and become so closed-minded that they become a part of the problem.
Right.
I want them to be open-minded enough. Have their whatever your values are, mm-hmm. have your values. Maybe they change along the way, but at least be open-minded enough to be receptive to another opinion and perspective. There are three things that I'll promote moving forward out of my role, and this is really working with students. Civil discourse, mm-hmm. deference, which is a high level of respect, and diplomacy. Mm-hmm. I think those are three things that we're lacking, not just our students, but across the country. Mm-hmm. But if I can have a part in helping our students understand those three aspects of humanity and leave with them, take them to their workplace, to their neighborhoods that they go and buy a house in, to their church if they do church, then that, I think that's a huge part of the work.
Yeah,
not just that they can go to their company and get a job because they can work in a diverse team, but like, because, gosh, you know how to have a hard conversation with somebody without cursing them out
right.
or wanting to fire them or wanting to quit your job. Mm-hmm. You work through stuff. So I think that's a part of this role as well, buddy. Yeah.
So how do you create diversity on a predominantly white campus?
Yeah, it starts at the top. Mm-hmm. I believe you have to have a president, and if it was a corporate situation, you have your CEO has got to be mindful of diversity, and it's got to be a priority for them. Mm-hmm. The things that are priorities for the top leadership tend to flow down, and I think that's what we have now in Dr. Oldham. Is it the number one priority? No, we've got our number one priority is that students come here and they graduate and ready to work, but it is a high priority as a part of that process. So that's number one. Number two, we've got to have, out of that, we've got to have a couple of key departments that are on board. That's admissions, mm-hmm. multicultural affairs, from a student recruitment standpoint. And we have that.
Yeah.
We've got great professionals in those areas. Dr. Stephen Keller is director of admissions, and Ms. Charia Campbell Director of Multicultural Affairs, and work closely with some of the academic areas, engineering, for example, Harry Engel, education, Dr. Zagumny and Dr. Baker, College of Business and Dean Payne. You got to have key players that are willing to do the work, and we've got that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we literally have now, as given the charge by Dr. Oldham, we have a diversity recruitment plan. We're working through that plan right now, literally as we speak. So we've got things for this spring. We've got plans for the fall, next spring. And we plan to launch a huge multicultural leadership academy for elite high school students from diverse backgrounds next summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then some of the colleges are very active in diversity recruitment themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I know engineering is, I know education is, and anybody listens to this, so I leave your college out, I apologize, but I know those areas have strategic plans and some folks committed to that work from a recruitment standpoint that is a part of the larger diversity recruitment piece. So, and then we're also engaging students in this work to help us recruit.
Right.
Dr. Johnson and his team have worked to sort of revision our visit program. And so they are in the process of hiring students who will be called trailblazers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm part of what they'll be doing, I'm sure is a component of it, is diversity recruitment as well as we engage prospective students that are coming to our campus to visit.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of things in work. At work in progress to impact student diversity, yeah, even now.
Where will you be located on campus?
I don't know. I was going to ask you if you heard where.
Hey, I got you. Can come up to my office. We'll hang out. You know.
No, we've got people. It's funny. I've been overwhelmed with people and their excitement about me in this role,
yeah.
And people wondering what is it going to be, Rob. Where's your office going
right,
to be? I've really taken me aback, really.
Yeah.
To see the support. We're still looking for where I'll be located, and you know, hopefully we'll have a suite and some staff as well.
Great.
But we've got a few options that we're looking at. So the president's tasked me to kind of come up with some spots, and we'll see which one's the best and how to make that work. I'm a student guy.
Yeah.
Although I'm going to sit on the cabinet as a cabinet member, and although I won't be the VP for Student Affairs, I'm a student guy,
right.
And I get energy mm-hmm. by being able to rub shoulders with students.
Right.
So it may end up being that I'm still somewhere in the university center.
Great.
I just got to see students, man. You know, I probably won't work as closely with students as I have up to this year and even this year, but I got to see them.
Yeah.
So we'll know soon enough.
Okay. You know, I'll leave it with this. You said that the Vice President of Student Affairs was your dream job.
Uh-huh.
And now you're the Chief Diversity Officer at a major university.
Yeah. There, I hope this doesn't sound prideful to anybody, because it's not. It's like I was made for the job.
Yes, absolutely.
And for those that, you know, I know how people, we sling mud so quickly nowadays. Nobody listened to what I'm saying now and suggest that I'm not going to make any mistakes in this work.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to make mistakes, but it's like I was created for the job.
Right.
And I think Dr. Oldham realized that, and he's kind of helped me to realize that, along with some of my mentors that are in my circle of counsel. Like, you know, like you see Chief Diversity Officer, the first actual permanent one.
Yeah.
You know, Mark was just kind of interim.
Right.
And he was perfect to be the first, like the inaugural one. I mean, if you're looking up the definition for what it's supposed to be at Tennessee Tech.
Yeah.
Like the first permanent person, I think it's probably me, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that with all humility.
Oh, I know.
God, I mean, I have to hold back the tears when I think about my path as a student and my involvement in the organizations that I was involved in as a student, and then all these degrees I've gotten from Tech and the friends that I've made over the years as a student and a graduate student, but now the work colleagues and just being able to communicate with different types of people. And it's just got to be me, man. And and it's uncomfortable saying that, but it makes me feel good to know that I'm in the right space. One of the things about the role that I didn't mention before, and I didn't want to read the job description to you. I just want to speak from the heart.
Yes.
But something that's in the job description that really fits me, for those people that know me and know that I'm a pastor also and do community work, is that this role, I think, is supposed to really be a catalyst for diversity and equity and inclusive thought mm-hmm. in the region. Mm-hmm. And that's something I loved. I love having conversations with Randy Porter, our county mayor, and Ricky Shelton, our city mayor,
right.
and doing community work with Impact and some other organizations. I love that. And, you know, starting to work with folks like Amy New.
Mm-hmm.
I love that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm given the latitude to be able to do some of that stuff because I think as this role goes, so does Tennessee Tech go. But as Tennessee Tech goes, so does the region go. So I think the role can have – it could be as far-reaching as having some economic impact down the line if I'm visionary enough and can be creative enough. So it's far beyond Tennessee Tech.
Great.
And so here's little old Robert Owens II from Murfreesboro, really Walter Hill, Tennessee, man.
Yeah.
I'm blessed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, appreciate the job that you did during your – interim time as the vice president for student affairs. And like you said, I think everybody knew that it was a no-brainer to make you the chief diversity officer here at Tennessee Tech, and looking forward to the things that you're going to do there. Dr. Rob Owens, anything else you want to add or pontificate on before we wrap up the interview?
Human beings are much more resilient sometimes than I think we give ourselves credit for. I've seen that in a way that I would not have anticipated in the last, was this almost April, last 15 months. And I started this job in January 2020, and 2 weeks after I started, we thought we had our first case of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's when, and we didn't, but we began to galvanize and have these hours and hours meetings on multiple days. That was the beginning of my work as the interim VP, but also my exploration into like what human beings can really do, how resilient we are. We lost some people along the way, buddy. I've got folks in my division that lost loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
I've got folks in my division that were really sick, people across campus, same experience, people across our city
mm-hmm.
and our county. But man, we made it. And so that's my thing, you know. And I think Tennessee Tech, we have the best students of any public university in the state. We've got great faculty, staff, and administration. And I can say with all pride, you know, wings up, man. Yeah, so wings up.
And that's going to wrap up Tennessee Tech Today for this week. Be sure to check out the TT website at tntech.edu. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next week's show, be bold, fearless, confident, and kind. Wings up, everybody.